During Memorial Day at Lowe's, shop household must-haves for less. Save $80 on a Charbroil Performance Series 4-Burner Grill to chef up something special. Plus, get up to 45% off select major appliances to keep things fresh. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/27. While supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on Silver Drive in Columbus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time to find furniture that feels like the one. Shop Haverty's Memorial Day Sale and save on furniture backed by a regret-free guarantee. Plus, explore fresh styles arriving just in time for summer. Visit Haverty's online or in-store in Columbus at Polaris.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is The Big Breakdown. A long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
The retrial of Alec Murdaugh is coming up. The attorneys laid out what the retrial is actually going to look like, including timeline expectations, venue considerations, new post-trial information, Alec Murdaugh's personal reaction to the Supreme Court ruling, and their absolute refusal to consider any plea deal. We are covering the practical roadmap that they have described. That's what we are breaking down here. The team said that they do not expect a retrial this year, possibly within a year, but not by the end of the year. And there's a lot to work through here. You got the preparatory work, such as the 8,000-page transcript to review, discovery scrub, new experts. If we're talking about the next trial of Alec Murdaugh, Poot already said, at least a year. So maybe around this time next year, maybe a little bit further out. Where do you think, Bob? How far out do you think this needs to be for adequate time for both sides to prepare that both will agree on?
At least a year. Least a year. You know, and especially for the state, like Waters, because they narrowed down what financial crimes are going to come in. And again, that really set the stage. Like that painted him as the shitbag. You know what I mean? It's like they put that case on first because it put him in a position to have to testify. And look, I mean, I always thought Murdaugh was going to testify either way, whether they brought the financial crimes in or not, because he's that guy. You know, he's I'm the smartest guy in the room, and I'll be able to convince all these people because that's what I do. You know, I'm a wordsmith, and you know, I'm going to be able to convince them that I didn't do this, but. The reality is that with that financial crime aspect being narrowed so significantly, it really changes the entire case for the state in terms of what they're going to put on. And they're going to have to deal way, way more heavily with the problems with SLED's investigation of the case. Crime because scene. That was awful, man.
Yes.
Like, I mean, everything about that. And again, the financial crimes aspect of it, like really covered up a lot of the holes in the state's case, you know, because of the way that it painted Murdaugh as that kind of monster that was doing this to clients, where these are people that absolutely needed this money to survive because their lives had been ruined because of injuries and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And this guy just had no soul, and he's stealing from the people who needed the money the most. So like, that was burned into the psyches of the jurors. So Waters didn't have to get as deep into the murder side of it, you know? And when you're talking about everything that they were able to pull in terms of the evidence, you know, there was some powerful evidence from the defense in that case that really kind of supported the concept that, look, you know, we know exactly when Murdoch was in his car because of the data we were able to pull from the car. You know, I mean, that OnStar shit was powerful stuff, not for the state, but really for the defense. At the end of the day, the state's entire case rested upon the fact that there was the video that was taking place in the kennels that Murdoch wasn't aware of when he made his initial statements to law enforcement. He didn't know it existed, which made him seem guilty. This time, like, he's because when Murdoch testified, like, I'll never forget, I'm like, this fucking guy blew it. I'm like, you go in there and you own exactly why you lied to Sled about that, you know, because like any normal person like Robin or Tony, if our spouse was killed on our property along with one of our children, God forbid that any of that happened, none of the three of us for one second would not think that we were not going to be the first and only person that they were going to look at as the culprit of that crime. I'm getting on the stand if I'm Murdoch and I'm saying, look, man, I'll tell you flat out. It's not because I didn't trust Sled in general. It's because I knew for a fact, I'm a lawyer. I knew that you were going to think that I was the person who did this. And I was not willing to put myself anywhere near them in terms of the time around when they were killed, because all that does is seals my fate, which it did. They had the evidence of it. But in terms of why he lied about it, you're not going to give law enforcement any more than they're already going to have in terms of their thought process on who did this. And you putting yourself down in the kennels within what they consider 15 minutes of, you know, both Maggie and Paul being killed is not something that you're going to give up willingly. You're just not. And if he doesn't know that, and to me, that was a reasonable explanation that anybody who is in self-preservation mode is going to put out there. Sure. Like, you know, I mean, that's just the way that the human mind is going to think, because you're trying to save yourself.
And he's all drugged up at the time.
Yeah,
too.
That's the thing, so too. So his brain was not working whatsoever during the entire time frame, because he was $50,000 worth of drugs already.
But aside from that, it's the thing that I said. Self-preservation mode is a real thing, man. It is. You know, it just is.
Why, at the end of the day, do you think the Sled investigation was so shitty? I'm trying to figure out, like, who does this even benefit? It benefits no one. I mean, it doesn't benefit Alec, really. It doesn't benefit actually finding whoever did this if it wasn't Alec. And it's just obvious shit, too. Just fingerprinting things. The fact that, like, John Marvin, Alec's brother, is down there the next day scrubbing up brains himself is like, what the fuck? Like, what's going on? I know, like, the police don't do the cleanup, but we're talking, like, literally the next day, like, they're down there cleaning it up, the family, like, without more of an investigation going on. It was cleared very quickly as well. I just, that whole thing doesn't make any sense to me, other than do they have blinders on already going, well, it's Alex, so we don't have to investigate further. We got enough. Or they weren't really treating it like it was Alec either at the time. He wasn't arrested. He was sitting there in the room smoking cigars with the boys.
That's the fucking thing.
None of it makes sense. None of it makes sense.
That's the fucking thing. That's exactly the pinpoint of the issue. And it goes back to the history of the Murdoch family.
Yeah.
You know, because there may be some cops that couldn't stand that family, but I guarantee you that there's cops that are like, it's the Murdochs.
There's nothing there that they did to exonerate him, and there's nothing there that they did to convict him.
Right. I mean, everything that they fucked up, you know, and again, and Robin will attest, you know, I don't know if you're out there processing scenes, but there is no such beast as a perfect processing of a crime scene, because there are human beings involved.
Close.
There's always going to be mistakes. Whether or not they're fatal is a different thing. Usually they're not, you know, I mean, but sometimes they are. In this particular thing, when you're talking about, like, the tire tracks that were never preserved, you know, and the whole thing with why you didn't put up any tents to preserve the way that, because the rain came, remember? It was like they had the tire tracks and they did nothing to preserve the scene. They didn't fucking cordon the shit off. It was like, everything about it was insane. And you know, the way that they handled the first initial contact with Murdoch after it, where he's sitting in the back of the car. It was so casual and weird that it was like, you know, it's like, again, when you're thinking about the reality of the situation, and if you take out the Murdoch legacy of that family down there, and it's you, me, or Robin, where the cops are showing up, do you think that we're getting treated that way, or do you think they're putting the thumb on us immediately? Because it's going to be the only thing that they think. It's because it's Occam's razor. Like, you're here. You did it. Oh, you're telling me you didn't hear somebody come on and murder, like they were shot, for God's sake. What were you doing? How couldn't you hear it? You know, like none of that would have made any sense to the cops, and they would have been like, all right. You know, like, I'm actually excited about this trial because
I am too. I think we're going to get, I hope.
It's going to be different.
Other people are going to be exposed here in this circle of wrong with Alec Murdoch. Go ahead.
So while you all were chatting, I was actually looking up, because the thing that popped in my mind as we started talking about SLED is like, all right, so what happened? Was there a COVID effect that happened on the SLED investigations? Are they doing more or less? How many reps they have? Maybe they don't do a lot of these. And so I actually looked up the number, because again, when you can actually see a pattern of how many reps they have, it'll lend towards either they have skills at this or they don't have skills at this, or is it having to do with the Murdochs themselves, like we've been having some conjecture over. So here's what it says. In general, the number of investigations, murder investigations, SLEDS does a year down in South Carolina, 2024, 413, 2023, 481. They have the reps, so they should have been skilled in this. Piedmont region, 32 death investigations. PD region, 24 death investigations. So they have the reps. So the way I look at this is, all right, they have the reps. They should have had their shit wired. And the fact that they didn't says that there's confirmation bias is most likely impacting how they did it.
Yep. I mean, I love that. And that's it, you know, cause you can't give the, well, we're inexperienced.
No, nope,
you know,
they are.
You see that in Delphi.
Right.
Those guys were,
or even in up in Moscow, Idaho.
Yeah.
That's a small department, and yet they were able to get their shit together and do it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because SLED is the state. I mean, it's not just the local folks that are, you know, at the small department coming in. This is the state law enforcement.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not Barney Fife for all.
Yeah. It's the state's regions. Version of the FBI, basically.
Yeah. They have four regions. They have Piedmont, PD, Low Country, and Midlands. Each of them, tons. PD region is 24, is the lowest that they had for a year, but 185 in Midlands, and then 32 and 100. I mean, they got reps. Especially at this level, you know, they'd be calling in their best people. They should have been calling his best people. I mean, inside the bureau, when you have a major case break, you know, a young guy like me, I mean, this happened to me in my career so much. It's like, all right, we got a really cool case. And they're like, hey, stand aside, young guy. This is actually important. You can ride along. You're going to learn. And in about 10 years or 15 years, when you get some reps, we might put you out front. But for right now, you're going to sit here and learn as the big guys got it.
Yeah. I mean, man, yeah, it's... There's so many aspects of this thing that are fascinating, because in that case, it was the first time that I can really think of in a major high profile case that the government was able to establish a time of death strictly by cell phone usage. Like that. It wasn't the ME saying this is when they were killed. It was when the usage of the phone stopped is when they pinpointed it. And it's like, everybody's going to have time to attack that timeline there, you know, because the timing matters in terms of when Alec leaves that property and when he gets to his mom's house and was he there? Because again, they needed him to be on the property at the time, you know? So in terms of the attack on that, and we all know technology gets better day by day. You know, in terms of what they're going to be able to do with extractions and Cellebrite and all the different data that they're going to be able to pull from all the different programs and software that exist out there in terms of cell phone extractions and, you know, the data that they got from OnStar, which remember they got late in the game.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like now they're going to have the time to really sink their teeth in and get their experts looking at it. And they're going to be able to fight the timeline. Like that's always my first rule. Is attack the timeline.
Yeah.
You make it so that your client couldn't have done it because your client wasn't there. That's how you attack a case.
Yeah.
It's going to be fascinating, man.
I want to know, and I don't know why they've never gone down this road, or maybe they have to some extent. I think a lot of answers would be found as to where the hell $50,000 is going every month in drugs. If he's spending that much money and getting that many drugs, where is it going? Who is he getting it from? Why has that never been identified? I mean, we look at other cases. Look at like Corey Richens. We just finished that one. We knew all about the person who got her the drugs and where that person got the drugs from, and then the other person in between that too.
Yep. Did you
that's
say
never been explained Tony, here in any of this?
Did I misspeak? That was that $50,000 a month or a week? I probably misspoke it then.
I don't know. I thought it was a month. I could be off. Okay. Whatever it was a ridiculous amount. Being.
It's what we call FU money. It's what we call FU money. I got money, so FU.
I'm saying, he was not fucking ingesting that many drugs. He'd be dead.
Yeah, it was kill a zoo amount of drugs.
He was dealing. I'm telling you, he had a side hustle where he was dealing because he was of the mindset that he still could make his clients whole. Like that's where you're talking about his mind was so murky because he was definitely using. He was definitely addicted as well. But in his warped mind, his concept was like, all right, I'm going to have to not only start dealing, I'm going to have to start dealing in volume because that's how I'm going to get this money back into my lawyer's trust account in order to be able to pay my client. He still thought that he was going to be able to get out from under the fact that he was dipping into his lawyer's trust account in order to start paying. And it was essentially a Ponzi scheme at the inception of it. Like when it started, he didn't.
So he's bailing himself out. This is great. I really love this idea. So he's bailing him in his mind, his broken brain. He's bailing himself of his financial issues by dealing drugs. Right. As opposed to these other morons that's, like Corey Richens that says, well, I'm a couple million dollars in debt, and so I'm going to kill my husband and get his life insurance policy. It still won't cover my debt, but so it's the same thing.
He's Walter Whiting it.
Right, exactly. That's exactly what he was doing. Because remember, he was in the world. Like, he got into the world exactly like Walter White did.
Walter White did.
I know. He had cancer.
Yeah.
He didn't have the insurance to pay for it. He had to generate the money in somehow.
And provide for his family. You can rationalize away of horrendous things.
All of it. Because we heard the testimony from the people that worked into his office. This guy would fucking, like, walk in, like, once a week. Like, all right, how you doing at the end of the day? Like, he was out in these streets. Yeah. Like, he had moved on to doing a different thing to generate money. And Tony, it goes exactly why aren't we hearing about that? Why wasn't there an investigation into his drug circle was?
Because there's fixers in there. He's got to have had fixers in there.
That's why we're not hearing about it, because it's other people are being protected. I think that's why this case makes no sense.
Always comes back to that, doesn't it?
I feel like there's something in here. There's other people being protected. I do think Alec had something to do with it. Did he pull the trigger? Doubt it. But I think it's very much like Breaking Bad to a certain extent. Look at those characters. I think Alec was mixed up in some of that shit. And if you screw with that too much, there's far more people who could be murdered other than just Maggie and Paul.
No doubt.
And I would not be remotely surprised if Alec has kept his mouth shut about that for the protection of his existing son and the rest of his family.
Because what if there's a bunch of Salamancas in prison with him right now?
Well, I mean, anything is possible, but the only thing that makes sense to me. It's either Alec did this and he was drugged out of his mind and it's as stupid an Occam razor as it can possibly be, or it's a little more complex. And the evidence points to it being a little more complex.
Robin,
yeah.
Look up, just do what you do and figure out where most black market opioids are coming from, because I guarantee you they're not coming from people's scripts. All right. They're being produced probably by the cartel and they're being shipped up. I mean, like, you could just follow the money and see where the money's going, and you're going to be able to kind of figure this thing out, to go to what Tony was talking about, wherein all right, if you're messing with the cartel, this is exactly the kind of shit that the cartel would do.
I hate doing these conspiracy theory things, but you know, some of this, because there's so many blank holes on this $50,000 either a week or a month for drugs to pay off that debt. Because even yesterday we were talking about this, I wasn't getting how, like trying to kill yourself or killing your kids, your wife and your kid, makes sense if you're in debt. I mean, it just, when they didn't have life insurance policies. And so, and that's why I said this is going to be a tough trial, even though, again, I think I'm like everyone else. He is a center hub of everything that happened with their deaths. But now that we're looking at this drug dealing side, that gets interesting. Okay, so black market opioids, United States overwhelmingly produced in Mexico, precursor chemicals primarily sourced China. Where South Carolina fits in, strictly downstream consumer, local distribution market, not a production site. Reaches South Carolina through national domestic trafficking networks across southwest border.
Yeah, so you gave me my answer. It's produced down in Mexico.
Yeah.
You know? And like that's where the thing is. Here's where it gets really interesting, because that concept that I have, that he's got to replenish the lawyer's trust account, because remember, he's got people working for him.
Yeah.
And lawyer trust accounts aren't like normal bank accounts. It's literally a trust where you hold your client's funds until they're going to get paid out on it. And I would be curious to see if the defense starts digging into, had there been deposits being made by Murdoch, because that's the only way that it proves up my theory, which is tricky, because typically your deposits are going to be a paper trail from a case that settled. You got a check from an insurance company, and you put it in the bank, and then it sits until you're cutting checks for everybody that's going to get paid out in the suit. So if money starts kind of flowing in and there's not a paper trail, and it seems like there were cash deposits, like there's just so much that we need to know that we didn't hear about in the first one, that it's,
could this become a drug trial case as well?
I mean, like if I'm the defense, I'm looking at it for certain. I'm seeing if it exists. I'm going to my guy and I'm saying, look, you know, you need to fess it up. Like what were you doing in terms of your drug trade? Like, were you
on the prosecution side? Could they charge you more than on the drug side? I mean, because we don't have charges.
They don't give
there.
A shit about the drug side. They want to get them on the murder side, man. You know what I mean?
It's yeah, like, but I mean, it would be included, though. I would.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they only care about the murder one. You know what I mean? Like that. Like ultimately, if it helps move the needle, then certainly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, if that becomes their theory.
Right, because I'm thinking, because again, you got to go, absent the financial side that they don't have to work with anymore, you need intent, you know, to kind of demonstrate to the jury what the hell was going on. And if you don't have that stream, again, which is, which as we're having our conjecture here, and our thought experiments, is that if of all this money issues was trying to be solved and they didn't cover last time by this drug stuff, that could play a huge role. It's again, then demonstrating the horrendous human being he was and the horrendous human beings he was working with in order to have this happen.
Yeah. I mean, but that's a dangerous path, man. Because that starts to give the defense an out. Like if they come after him on the drug shit and they uncover some things, I'm leaning into the concept that the cartel did this.
Oh, not him. Right. See, and I was holding on to it. He was the linchpin in the middle of orchestrating it.
Nah, yeah, like these guys that are dealers, they're securing their shit from down south. You know, it comes in bulk.
Right.
You know, and there's somebody that is getting the shit that Murdoch's ultimately getting from that guy. Like, I don't think that Murdoch was the guy that was getting it directly distributed to him. I think that there was a guy either above him or below him, and then Murdoch was coming in as a major customer to that guy. You know, but if
that involved, it would have come out in the first one anyway, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I would.
Big rabbit hole we just went down.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on who's involved and who doesn't want to be exposed and who is exposed. And and there's a landing strip on the property, too, as a listener pointed out. There's that, too. Yeah. Yes.
With unmarked Cessna cargo planes flying in somewhere from the south.
Yeah. It's like, so where do they come? Yeah. Yeah. It's. Oh my God.
We got to get flight tracker records for that, right?
Let's go, Robin. Yeah. You're on the job.
Actually, yes. That's not a bad idea.
Flight tracker records coming in on FlightAware to his property. That'd be interesting to look at during that time frame.
Can you do that?
I'm not sure how historical flight aware. I'm a pilot, so I'm there quite frequently. I'll take a look. I'm not sure how historical they maintain those. You know, someone's on there doing it right now.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're not talking about 50 years. You know what I mean?
I would think it might be available.
I think so, too.
I don't know. I don't know. That'd be interesting.
I'll need his address.
I'll find it. Yeah.
Send me that. I'll take a look.
Okay. All right. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in. I'm glad we did it. We've now solved the Murdaugh murders.
We just made it so complicated.
Good job, boys.
We did it.
Right. Bob Motta, Defense Diaries. Go check it out wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. And
Buried inside the John Wayne Gacy investigation. And these two beautiful guys, or at least one of them, hopefully Robin too. We are doing a fundraiser, 12-hour fundraiser this Saturday for Aaron Spencer, which Tony has covered many, 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 many times on his channel. So hopefully you guys will come over there, hang out, come see Tony, hopefully Robin. Some point on Saturday, we're going to work it out. We're going to work it out.
Yep, we will make an appearance. So definitely we'll be there. That'll be a good thing. And tell me about the fundraiser a little bit as you're getting ready for that trial.
Yeah, it's a fundraiser, and that trial is June 22nd.
Jesus, yeah, it's coming up here.
Oh, it's coming, and you know, there's experts, there's lawyers. It's a whole thing, you know. So
awesome,
and then it's going directly to the family for attorneys' fees and costs. So it's
great.
It's a good cause. It really is
awesome. Good stuff. All right, cool. All right, I'll see you there this weekend. And your thoughts in the comment section. We'll continue the conversation right there. Until next time, for Bob, for Robin, and Todd, I am Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The Attorney General of South Carolina wants the death penalty for Alec Murdaugh. Before the defense team could even step to the microphone to announce a federal lawsuit against the woman who corrupted his trial, Alan Wilson dropped a bomb that reframed everything. "We're back to square one," Wilson said. "And that means all our legal options are on the table, including the death penalty." Dick Carpudlin went straight at it. Wilson isn't talking to the lawyers in his office here. He's talking to his political consultants. He's running for governor, if you didn't know that. And someone told him the death penalty makes a good sound bite. If you want to get a little attention, you're going to go after Alec Murdaugh for the death penalty? Oh, my God. What does Alan Wilson know now? Harpudlin asked that he didn't know 5 years ago. What new piece of evidence justifies escalating to death? According to the defense, the answer is nothing. There's no new evidence. There's no new political calculation. But here's what Harpudlin didn't say at that podium. And this is important. The death penalty threat might be the best thing that's happened to the defense. If Wilson actually pursues capital charges, it triggers individual voir dire automatically, meaning every potential juror gets questioned one-on-one separately instead of in a group. It's a requirement when you have death penalty qualified jury. When you hear terms like that, that's one of those things of what it means. It's a death penalty qualified this or that. That's one of those extra steps that a jury that's going to be in a death penalty case, a capital case, would go through in South Carolina. Now, what's different? Well, it's a little more thorough. And you get a lot more control, if you will, if you are an attorney on the case and you're deciding who's going to get on this jury and who's not going to get on this jury with the cards that you are allowed to play. And if you're playing your cards on this one, it may be a gamble worth taking. That is exactly what Harpudlin asked for at this press conference. He brought up the Pee Wee Gaskins case from 40 years ago. Because who doesn't remember Pee Wee Gaskins?
Pee-wee Herman, but I was unaware of Pee-wee Gaskins. But what's interesting is that at the same time, I guess 41 years ago, it's pretty close to the same time of Pee-wee Herman. Did we have a double-eyed? No, we didn't. Anyway, I didn't know anyone else named Pee-wee other than, anyway. I digress. What happened with Pee-wee Gaskins? The case from 40 years ago where they went through 400 jurors to seat 14? He wants that level of screening. Well, if Wilson goes death penalty, he gets it by operation of law. Wilson may have just handed the defense their best jury selection tool while trying to look tough for a campaign. Whether Wilson's people thought that through is an open question. You know, whether Harpootalin noticed it immediately is not either. In the contradiction on Wilson ends goes deeper than just the strategy. This is the same attorney general who publicly called Becky Hill's conduct during the trial inappropriate, but ultimately harmless. The South Carolina Supreme Court unanimously called it shockingly jury interference and said Hill placed her fingers on the scales of justice. You got to pick one, Alan. You can't have both. Either what Hill did was harmless and the conviction should stand, or it was so bad the state's highest court had no choice but to throw it all out. The Supreme Court chose the second option, and now the man who waved off that misconduct as harmless wants to execute the defendant whose trial was destroyed by it. Meanwhile, Wilson has not pursued Becky Hill for jury tampering. Statute says whoever tampers with the jury or attempts to is guilty of a crime. The Supreme Court's findings say Hill attempted exactly that. Harpootalin put it plainly, please, Alan, focus on your job and not the politics. But before we go any further here down this path, oh, Alec Murdaugh and all the wrongs that actually may have been done by him, I know it's kind of a crazy thing to say. Let me be very clear about something. Alec Murdaugh is not a sympathetic figure, not even close. He is a convicted financial criminal serving 27 years on state charges and 40 years on federal charges. He stole nearly $9 million over a decade from people who trusted him, including the family of his own housekeeper, Gloria Satterfield, who died under what some may call suspicious circumstances. He stole from a man with intellectual disabilities. He looked people in the eye, lied to them, and took their money. A jury heard all of that during his murder trial, and it destroyed whatever credibility he had left. None of that is in dispute. He pled guilty to it. He has said publicly he deserves to be in prison for what he did, but the South Carolina Supreme Court ruled unanimously that his murder trial was corrupted by the clerk of court. And I need you to hear this part. That ruling is not a finding of innocence. It's a finding that the process was broken. A corrupted process matters whether the defendant is a saint or Alec Murdaugh. So the actual reason for this press conference was to announce a federal civil rights lawsuit against Becky Hill, filed under 42 U.S.C. section 1983. Jim Griffin laid out the legal framework. The Supreme Court has already adjudicated that Hill deprived Murdaugh of his constitutional right to a fair trial. That settled law. Now the defense is converting those findings into a federal civil case. But let's talk about what the lawsuit actually is, because the defense has now framed this as accountability, an investigation. It is both of those things, but it's also a chess move. Filing a federal civil suit gives the defense subpoena power and deposition authority against Hill before the retrial even starts. Anything they uncover in civil discovery, whether Hill had help, what SLED knew, what that attorney general's office did with that anonymous email about the egg lady juror, whether Hill pulled this kind of thing in other cases, all of that becomes ammunition for the criminal retrial. This is a very good move. If you did something wrong in South Carolina, I'm telling you, Poot and Griffin are your men. I know, years ago, when I was a young true crime reporter, all of the 3-4 years ago when we started this channel, I had some things to say about them. But you know what? You learn as you go. Now, I'm talking strategic-wise. These people know what they are doing. It does not necessarily mean they personally believe Alec Murdaugh is innocent. And they've been strategically clear about that. They are very good at their jobs. These are the people you would want in your corner. These are not inept attorneys in any stretch of the imagination. Harpootlin and Griffin are building their defense for the murder case through a civil action against the clerk. It's smart lawyering. And you should see it for what it is. No matter how much you think Alec Murdaugh is a horrible human being, I agree. But he's got some really good lawyers. It's fascinating to watch them at work because they are good at what they do. You can hate them. You can be mad at them. You cannot agree with anything. But Alec Murdaugh is getting a new trial. The lawsuit seeks over $600,000 in damages. And this is where you need to you need your defense attorney filter on, because Harpootlin and Griffin are very good at framing things, as we've just talked about. According to their complaint, that money came from a court-authorized withdrawal from Murdaugh's 401k retirement account, which they call his sole remaining asset. They want you picturing a man's last dollar going up in smoke because a corrupt clerk wanted to be famous. Effective framing, but incomplete. That 401k was liquidated through an agreement with court-appointed receivers who were managing Murdaugh's frozen assets on behalf of the people he stole from. $600,000 went to the defense. Roughly $400,000 went to the receivership for his victims, if the math is right. When the defense later asked for more money from that account, the attorneys for Murdaugh's victims fought it tooth and nail. Eric Bland, representing the Satterfield family, told the court that giving Murdaugh more of those funds amounted to re-victimizing his clients all over again. So when the defense paints this as an innocent man's retirement burned by a rogue clerk, just remember the families of Gloria Satterfield, Mallory Beach, and others had a very different relationship with said money. But again, good attorney work. And good attorney work for Mr. Bland as well, who's been on this program before. Both making very, very valid points on behalf of their clients. The complaint also alleges Hill was motivated by personal financial gain. She co-authored that book about the trial that reportedly generated around $100,000 in profits before being pulled amid plagiarism allegations. The filing says Hill told people that a guilty verdict would help book sales and that she, and this is straight from the complaint, needs a lake house. We'll see if that holds up. That's what discovery is for. And that discovery is going to be far more interesting than the $600,000 damages claim, because the real question the lawsuit is built to answer isn't about money. It's about whether Becky Hill was a lone wolf. Defense doesn't think she was. The suspicious removal of juror Myra Crosby, the egg lady, is Exhibit A. Hill brought fabricated information into Judge Newman's chambers about Crosby's ex-husband posting on Facebook. That was a lie. Then an anonymous email materialized targeting the same juror investigated by the AG's office and SLED without the defense being told. Harpootlin pointed reporters to Joe McCullough, the attorney representing Crosby, who's been independently investigating. The message was clear. They think this thread pulls on something much bigger. And this should bother everybody, regardless of which side you are on. Hill pled guilty in December of 25 to misconduct in office, obstruction of justice, and perjury. She admitted to showing sealed crime scene photos to media and lying about it under oath. Her sentence? Probation and community service. A clerk of court who pled guilty to perjury was found by the state's highest court to have engaged in shocking jury interference, walked away with community service. You don't have to like Alec Murdaugh to think that that's kind of a problem. Now, the press conference shifted to what a retrial looks like, and this is where it gets interesting, because this is not a replay. This is a fundamentally different case the second time around, and I don't think people fully appreciate that yet. The defense now has 8,000 pages of sworn testimony from every prosecution witness. So think about what that means. In the first trial, they were hearing state witnesses for the first time, reacting in real time. Now they have the full transcript. They can bear impeachment for every single witness, catch every inconsistency, every contradiction, every place where what somebody said on the stand doesn't line up with what the evidence shows. That's essentially a deposition of every state witness, and the prosecution can't take it back. The element of surprise is gone. Every question the prosecution asks, the defense knows where it's going because they've read the transcript. On top of that, the financial crime evidence may get handled very differently. Harpootlin's theory, and it's just his theory, is that 2.5 weeks of widows, orphans, and people with disabilities describing how Alec stole from them is what actually convicted Murdaugh. By the time the murder evidence came in, the jury was already done with them. A new judge could limit how much of that financial crime comes in, how they're presented, and how long the prosecution gets to parade them. And you can agree or disagree on if that's appropriate or not, but this is an element of what's coming up. That was one of the most bitterly contested issues in the first trial, and the landscape has changed. The defense also believes they didn't get everything from the prosecution during the first round of discovery. They intend to scrub that hard. That's what the civil suit is part of. New experts need to be hired and briefed. All this takes time. The defense expects roughly a year. And all of it costs money. They don't have. You're going to be sitting here going, well, when is the new Murdaugh trial? Probably about a year from now. We're in May of 2026. I'm going to go, let's see here. What would you say? When would you predict it's going to be? I'm going to go, already in May. They need about a year. And you got summer. August of 27. That's when I put it on my bingo card. You let me know where you think it's going to land on yours in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Griffin was very candid about the finances. No new money, no found money. They're saying they're in the hole. And you can believe or not believe, I know. But the job isn't finished, and they're not walking away, he said. So say what you want to say about Putin Griffin. That's a striking thing to say publicly about the most high-profile case in South Carolina. Venue is also a live question. Carlton County may be impossible. The defense is exploring a motion to transfer to a county with similar demographics, which probably rules out Richland and Charleston, though Harpootlin noted Charleston is contiguous. So maybe. Lovely city. And there will be no plea deal. None. That was absolute. Alec Murdaugh will never enter a plea that requires admitting he killed his wife and son. The defense wants a trial. The state can dismiss the charges if it wants. Short of that, this is going back to a courtroom. Then the defense laid out what what they say is a devastating list of investigative failures by SLED. Now, SLED and the prosecution would have plenty to say about all this, and they'll get their chance at the retrial. But this is in the defense's terms, so take it for what it is. This is the defense's argument for why the investigation was built to confirm a conclusion, not to find the truth. They said SLED never followed tire tracks leading away from the scene. They said SLED mishandled Maggie's phone GPS data, that downloading it at the SLED lab overrode the actual location data. So the last recorded position on Maggie's phone was Broad River Road, the SLED lab address, not Moselle. They say SLED never searched Almeida, Alec's mother's house, where he drove that evening, even though the prosecution later implied he ditched weapons during that drive. They say SLED never processed the feed room for fingerprints or DNA. A bloody footprint next to Paul's body turned out to be a Colleton County deputy's. The coroner estimated time of death by placing his hand under the victim's armpits instead of using a thermometer. Harpootlin, a former prosecutor, could barely contain himself. Stuck his hand under the armpit? Really? The defense's expert tested whether shots fired at the kennels could be heard from inside the house and established without contradiction that they could not. The prosecution would tell you a completely different story about the investigation. They'd say the evidence pointed to Alec from the start, that his own words and behavior convicted him, that the forensic and digital evidence built a coherent case. 12 jurors agreed unanimously. The defense's version is that SLED drew an imaginary circle the night of the murders, put Alec in the middle, and never seriously looked anywhere else. A new jury is going to have to sort all of this out. But here's the question nobody at that press conference asked, and it's the one I can't get past. If Alec Murdaugh didn't kill Maggie and Paul, and the defense has had 5 years to develop an alternative theory, 5 years of people investigating on Alec's behalf, 5 years of receiving new information, 5 years of living inside this case, why don't they have one? When a reporter asked who the defense thinks did it, Harpootlin said they wish they knew. They blame SLED's failures, the tire tracks they didn't follow, the GPS data they corrupted, the crime scene they didn't process, and those are legitimate criticisms. Whether you like Alec Murdaugh or not, they are. Assuming the defense's version of events holds up. But at some point, we would have found the answer if SLED hadn't destroyed the evidence. Stops being an argument, it starts actually being the gap. The defense has subpoena power coming. They have a civil lawsuit designed to peel back what happened. They have information they won't discuss publicly. Maybe they know more than they're saying. They strongly hinted at that. If we tell you, you'll be telling them. But right now, the defense's answer to the biggest question in the case is, we don't know. And that's worth sitting with. Jim Griffin says he spoke to Alec after the Supreme Court ruling came down. And according to Griffin, Alec had already read the opinion. I'm reading it. I see it. It says reverse, but I still have a hard time believing it. Is your Alec impression of the day. Griffin described the man who's lost every significant legal ruling since this began and couldn't process it when the system finally ruled in his favor. Griffin says Alec got emotional, thanked the legal team, reported what he's apparently said from the start, that he deserved prison for the financial crimes, but being convicted of murdering his wife and son when he says he didn't do it is the most unbearable. And then he sealed the envelope with his snot. Just, here you go, Jim. I got a letter for you. I sealed it with boogers. That's Harpootlin and Griffin telling you what their client said, and it's worth hearing. It's also worth remembering that 12 people heard weeks of evidence and reached the opposite conclusion. The Supreme Court's reversal doesn't tell us who killed Maggie or Paul Murdaugh. It tells us that the trial that answered that question wasn't fair. And it wasn't. That matters enormously, but it's not the same thing as innocence. Anybody telling you otherwise on either side is selling you something. The defense briefly addressed Buster Murdaugh, and Harpootlian asked for one thing, privacy. That kid has been through enough. Buster supports his father, and Harpootlian left it there. Does he? So where does this go? The Supreme Court will issue the documents in the coming weeks, sending the case to a trial court. Chief Justice Kittings will appoint a new judge. The defense plans to push for the unknown male DNA found under Maggie's fingernails to be submitted to CODIS, the national database. They say that DNA belongs to a male unrelated to any Murdaugh or any member of Maggie's family, and they say it was never followed up on. They also say they've turned information from independent investigators over to SLED, and doubt SLED has done a thing with it. Harpootlian raised a fair question. Does it make sense to have the agency that built the murder case investigating whether their own work was valid? You can think he's asking that for strategic reasons. It's still a fair question. What we're watching now is a case being rebuilt from the ground up on both sides. The defense has three fronts: the federal lawsuit against Hill, retrial preparation with no money and a year of work ahead, and now a potential capital case driven by what they call political ambition. The prosecution has its own challenge. Retry a case the whole country has already watched without the element of surprise in front of a jury that hasn't been poisoned by the clerk, and prove it all over again. Both sides should welcome that, because if the evidence is as strong as the state believes, a fair trial should produce the same result. And if it doesn't, then the first conviction was never about the evidence to begin with. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I look forward to your thoughts and your feedback. We'll continue our conversation right there. Links are in the comment section and in the description. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
It's time to find furniture that feels like the one. Shop Haverty's Memorial Day sale and save on furniture backed by a regret-free guarantee. Plus, explore fresh styles arriving just in time for summer. Visit Haverty's online or in-store in Columbus at Polaris.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
It's time to find furniture that feels like the one. Shop Haverty's Memorial Day sale and save on furniture backed by a regret-free guarantee. Plus, explore fresh styles arriving just in time for summer. Visit Haverty's online or in-store in Columbus at Polaris.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time to find furniture that feels like the one. Shop Haverty's Memorial Day sale and save on furniture backed by a regret-free guarantee. Plus, explore fresh styles arriving just in time for summer. Visit Haverty's online or in-store in Columbus at Polaris.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
It's time to find furniture that feels like the one. Shop Haverty's Memorial Day sale and save on furniture backed by a regret-free guarantee. Plus, explore fresh styles arriving just in time for summer. Visit Haverty's online or in-store in Columbus at Polaris.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It's time to find furniture that feels like the one. Shop Haverty's Memorial Day Sale and save on furniture backed by a regret-free guarantee. Plus, explore fresh styles arriving just in time for summer. Visit Haverty's online or in-store in Columbus at Polaris.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time to find furniture that feels like the one. Shop Haverty's Memorial Day Sale and save on furniture backed by a regret-free guarantee. Plus, explore fresh styles arriving just in time for summer. Visit Haverty's online or in-store in Columbus at Polaris.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.